Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you World Radio Magazine in digest form, the November 2007 issue. World Radio is published by Armand Noble. His call is N6WR. The editor is Nancy Kott, K-O-T-T. Her call is WZ8C. World Radio is published monthly by World Radio Incorporated, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. Telephone number 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hems may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. And there is a website at http://www.handyham.org. Let's begin today in the editor's log. Again, the editor is Nancy Kott. I'm sitting at the computer trying to decide what subject to cover in the Ed log. November rings the Thanksgiving holiday to mind. My first inclination is to write about being thankful about amateur radio and the wonderful opportunities it affords us by opening the radio waves to worldwide friendships. But the bands have been in the pits for a long time, and the emotional climate of amateur radio is generally unsettled. And it seems rather Pollyannish to remind people to look on the bright side. I was opening my mail, still pondering the Ed log topic, when I came across this email. It puts things in perspective. It gives me an opportunity to put in a plug for a very important cause. Bill Look, W9BOK, writes, having just celebrated the 20th anniversary of my first heart transplant in 1987, I am acutely aware of the shortage of donor organs. After having my first transplanted heart until 2000, I needed a retransplant later that year. Currently, 92,000 people await the gift of life, and the list is getting longer every month. We need a chance to live a better life, watch their children grow, or start their own new families. I have been very fortunate to see these things and do these things. Some were very good and some not so good. But I wouldn't have missed either. The time to talk about this with your family is now, before the tragedy occurs and you have to make that decision. I have met both my donor families and have been speechless because of their generosity. I know I will never understand the depth of their loss. I only hope that it is eased by their kind and generous gift to others. Life is good. Pass it on. If you are interested in learning more about donation, you can go to the website www.unos.org for more info. That ends a quotation in Bill Luke's email. I used to think organ donation was creepy and something I would never consider until I had a personal experience that changed my way of thinking. About 12 years ago, I caught an airborne virus that attacked my heart. I thought I had bronchitis and ignored the shortness of breath, tiredness, and other symptoms for months. It got to the point where I thought I was having panic attacks because I would feel faint and dizzy when I was in stressful situations. I finally went to the doctor, who took an X-ray and said, "You're going straight to the emergency room." I said, "What if I don't?" He replied that I would go to the ER one way or the other, either voluntarily now or a couple of days later with a toe tag. Needless to say, I went home and packed a few things and went to the hospital. I was diagnosed with congestive heart failure, CHF, due to the damage the virus was doing to my heart. It took a few days to stabilize my condition before they could even do surgery. After the surgery, I was in the intensive care unit with a half dozen cardiac lung patients who were all on waiting lists for transplants. It opened my eyes to the generosity and beauty of the organ donation. How ignorant I was to have thought that donation was gross and creepy. Thankfully, I made a good recovery and no longer have CHF. And thankfully, there are families who allow their loved ones who have passed away to continue to help others. This Thanksgiving would be a good time to discuss this issue with your family and friends. And Pollyannish or not, take a moment to be thankful that we still have amateur radio, which allows us to put on our headphones and take a break from all the crazy things that are going on in the world. Remember to be kind to the person on the other end of the QSO or the CQ. You never know what they are battling. Nancy finishes by saying to please keep in touch either through our website at www.wr6wr.com or emailing me directly at nancy@tir.com or postal mail directly to Nancy, call WZ8C, P.O. Box 807, Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y, Michigan, M-I, 48440. Why don't we go now to World Radio Newsfront? The material is courtesy of the ARRL Letter and Newsline. Ham radio at the Zaca fire. Amateur radio operations in the giant California Zaca wildfire have wound down as flames are brought under control. Amateur radio operators from throughout California, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties assisted during the wildfire. The blaze started 04 July and burned over 240,000 acres before it was contained on the 2nd of September, making it the second largest wildfire in California state history. With the response now winding down, some of the statistics coming in are amazing, especially for amateur radio. For example, members of the Amateur Radio Emergency Service volunteered over 850 combined man-hours during the course of the firefight. Amateur radio operators worked at the Forest Service base camp, staffed roadblocks, answered phones at the Forest Service Information Call Center, drove fire patrols, and set up communications at a Red Cross shelter until phone could be installed. Amateur radio operators also served as observers and communicators in aircraft flown by the Sheriff's Aero Squadron. Some of these positions were staffed around the clock for days at a time. On 03 September, amateur radio operators spotted a new fire just outside the burned area. They reported it to fire crews who quickly sent an air tanker to put it out. A total of 45 ARES, A-R-E-S, operators responded from Santa Maria, Lomcamp, Santa Ynez Valley, and Santa Barbara, and mutual aid resources from Ventura. The Amateur Radio Emergency Service coordinated its response through the County Emergency Operations Center, where their station kept in constant contact with field units and relayed information from the field to officials in the Emergency Operations Center. Thanks again to AR Newsline. Here's an interesting one. FCC. That's the Federal Communication Commission, lowers vanity call sign fees. The FCC reduced the regulatory fee to obtain or renew an amateur radio vanity call sign by more than 40% on 17 September 2007. In a report and order released 06 August 2007, the commission reported it would reduce the fee from its current $20.80 to $11.70. This marks the lowest fee in the history of the current vanity call sign program. According to the ARRL letter, the FCC is authorized by the Communications Act of 1934 to collect vanity call sign fees to recover the costs associated with that program. This fee has fluctuated over the past 11 years from a low of $12 to a high of $50. In a report and order on the assessment and collection of regulatory fees for fiscal year 2007, the FCC anticipates some 14,700 amateur radio vanity call sign applications during the next fiscal year. This means that it expects to collect $171,990 in fees from the program. Compliments of ARRL and AR Newsline. Well, our next piece of World Radio Newsline is an obituary. We don't usually find them in this section, but here it goes. The film pioneer William Snyder, Call W0LHS Whiskey Zero Lima Hotel Sierra is now a silent key. William D. Snyder, W0LHS, a pioneering filmmaker and prolific amateur radio author, died Friday, 14 September. He was 90 years old. Snyder was best known as one of the Fargo, North Dakota's earliest professional film directors. He was responsible for more than 800 documentaries, commercial spots, and educational and technical films. In the world of amateur radio, Snyder will best be remembered as the World Radio Magazine columnist writing the Digital Bus column and for his participation in the Gatti helicopter expeditions from 1947 through 1948 to the mountains of the moon in East Africa. He was active for many years on RTTY, CW, Packet, and on the AM satellites. He held DXCC RTTY slant digital with 243 countries confirmed. Snyder first learned the art of filmmaking after graduating from Fargo Central High School in 1935. When he moved to Hollywood to work for the Technicolor Motion Picture Corporation, he returned 2 years later to attend North Dakota State University and serve 4 years in the U.S. Army Signal Corps. After getting out of the service in 1946, he sailed to Africa on a series of trips sponsored by helicopters, working as a cameraman and a radio operator. Bill Snyder Films made more than 80 award-winning films, including Cry of the Marsh, an educational film that documented dwindling wetlands. After retiring, Snyder still maintained his copious files of historical archives. He founded a newsletter for Fargo Central alumni called The Cynosure and served on the board of directors for Bonanzaville, USA. He was an active supporter of the Fargo Film Festival and executive director of the Fargo Theater. Snyder had surgery to repair an aortic aneurysm in July and had been recovering well before succumbing to pneumonia. That was thanks to WD0AKO through AR Newsline. Well, folks, I was delighted to see in the November 2007 issue of World Radio Magazine an article with the Handy Hams, as most of you probably know. This material that I record for the Massachusetts Reading Network Talking Information Center is also shared with the Courage Handy Ham System in Minnesota. In this issue, we have an operational skills piece, The Next Step, and it's co-authored by Avery Finn, call K0HLA, Kilo Zero Hotel Lima Alpha, and Patrick Tice, spelled T-I-C-E. Pat Tice's call is WA0TDA, Whiskey Alpha Zero, Tango Delta Alpha. Once you earn your license, what do you do? How do you get on the air? How do you operate your radio? What are the proper procedures to follow? What do you say when you first push the PTT switch? That's the push-to-talk switch. How do you operate in a net? What if you are asked to be net control? When we were first licensed, there was a novice license. Most everyone who wanted to be a ham would certainly have listened to shortwave broadcasts and the ham radio bands long before they began studying for their first license. Since the expectation to learn Morse, that's Morse code, was a given, that first CUSO, that's conversation between two parties, would be pretty well structured and deliberate. You knew that you would conduct a contact in a certain way, trading basic information about your name and location as well as your equipment. Well, this doesn't sound terribly exciting. It served a purpose. It allowed new hams to learn the ropes at a slow, deliberate pace. Few operators would come through this process not knowing the basics of how to call CQ or conduct an exchange on the air. Calling CQ is the way amateur radio operators reach out for someone on the airways. Well, that is what the operational skills class is all about. This year, it was made more special because of the Handy Ham 40-year anniversary celebration. Special event stations W0EQO and W0ZSW were in operation. This year, everyone learned under some very special conditions. Each of the new operators had pileups of stations waiting in line. Everyone in the class had the opportunity to be a net control on the HF net, that's the high frequency net. The 75 meter pico net was a perfect place to learn to operate. Using the Collins S line donated years ago by the late Senator Barry Goldwater, Barry's call was K7UGA, campers were introduced to classic station equipment. Jerry Kloss, spell K-L-O-S-S, call N0VOE, had made advance arrangements with normal net controls to allow the Handy Ham radio camp people to take over several of the time slots. As one person was operating, another would be standing by to take over, so the transition from one operator to the next was quick and easy. On 80 meters, the S line was putting out a signal just like it was brand new. Very good signal. Good audio. We did have a little trouble with drift. Remember that, you old-timers? We had to relearn how to let the tubes warm up, let the VFO settle down, tune the finals. Ha ha, those were the days. Most of the campers had never seen a radio that didn't have digital readout. Getting on the right frequency was a head-scratcher for some. But we had modern rigs, too. Most of the time, 20 meters was very hot, and we had a Kenwood TS-440 and two TS-2000s with speech clips and automatic antenna tuners. There were wire antennas, verticals, and beams. Our best HF antenna was a tri-bander at 50 feet, used mostly on 20-meter single sideband. The same operator rotation was used there, and it seemed to work okay. Our new operators had to contend with QSB and QRM for the first time. When the band went out, it did so very quickly. It would come back, but a whole new bunch of people would be there waiting to get the contact. By using the call book address, it made it relatively easy for new operators to make the contact without having to go through our contact information. Every operator in the room had several turns at running stations for the special event stations W0ZSW and W0EUO. Our primary function was to learn proper operating procedure when on the air for both the UHF and VHF bands as well as the high-frequency bands. After camp, licensed people could go home to their own hometowns and feel comfortable checking into a net or even being the net control. Did I mention that the dual-bander UHF-VHF rig was also busy on Echolink and repeaters most of the time? The best part is that it didn't matter who our operator was. From the more experienced to the less experienced, or someone with a speech problem, everyone we contacted understood and took their time with us. Logging was a challenge. Some of the contacts were logged on paper, and some were recorded in audio format on a digital recorder. Those will have to be transcribed before we will have any idea of how many special event contacts were made. Operating skills are not a given. They can be taught and learned. Do you know a person with a disability who might be interested in learning about amateur radio? Contact us. Here's their information, folks. Courage, Handy Ham System. Handy Ham is spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word. Courage, Handy Ham System. 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. That's Golden Valley, Minnesota, MN 55422. There is a toll-free number, 1-866-426-3442. If you work with the internet connection, the email address is lowercase ham-radio at courage.org. That's ham-radio at courage.org. And there's a great website at www.handyham.org. The article is titled Operational Skills, The Next Step, co-authored by Avery Finn, K0HLA, and Patrick Tice, WA0TDA, with the Handy Hams. Here's a little tidbit to change the pace. 1296 megahertz, worked all states, number one, awarded to Texas Ham. Al Ward, W5LUA, of Allen, Texas, is the first person to achieve the American Radio Relay League's worked all states, that's WAS, on 1296 megahertz, making him 1296 megahertz WAS, number one. Congratulations, Al. Al began his pursuit 25 January 1977 with his first 1296 megahertz contact with Leroy May W5HN, now a silent key. Al's 30-year quest ended last week with confirmed contacts with Wyoming, Utah, and Idaho, giving Al his last three needed states, thanks to Paul Perryman's WA5WCP EME expedition. Here's a quote. I couldn't have done this without Paul, Al says. Also thanks to Ron Roach, K0AL, and Barry Malowinchek, the VE4MA, in North Dakota for number 47 in August. Without them, it just wouldn't have been possible. After collecting his 50th QSL card, Al drove from his home in Texas to Little Rock, Arkansas, so that ARRL President Joe Harrison, W5ZN, could verify his cards and complete his WAS paperwork. Quoting again, verifying QSL cards from 30 years of activity brought back a lot of memories of several stations active on 1296, many who are silent keys now, Harrison said. Thanks to ARRL Newsline. It is a 6-meter beacon in Czechoslovakia, or what is now known as the Czech Republic. A new 6-meter propagation beacon has come to 50.060 megahertz in the Czech Republic, according to call sign OK2BVG. The OK0 EMW experimental beacon is in operation from Grid Square J. N88KS, running 1 watt to an inverted L antenna. It uses a home-built transmitter and identifies in Morse code at 6 words per minute. QSN reports go by email to lowercase lobomir.bobalik@rtv5.cz. Compliments of AR Newsline. Folks, those of you who are listening to this recording in digest form of World Radio Magazine or any of the other digest forms such as QST Magazine from the American Radio Relay League, if you're not familiar with the Q signals, there are a lot of them, QSL, QSO, I go on and on. They are really an integral part. It's a shorthand sort of a way to explain what is happening at that moment in time. I try to slow down a little bit when I give like a QSL to say what that means if you're not familiar with, but I can't do that all the time. So forgive me if I rattle along sometimes. It can be very boring if you're not really tuned into this, at least not at the beginning of your experience with amateur radio or ham radio. But I'll try to fill in and slow down the text by explaining certain little letters like CW or DX kind of thing. And that's the reason I do that, in case you wonder why I hesitate sometime and fill in a few little words to describe what I'm trying to tell you. Let's go now to DX World. DX is contacting any country outside of the continental contiguous United States, and this could indeed include Hawaii, Puerto Rico, or even Alaska. And people who are into ham radio collect these confirmation cards, which are QSL cards. That's confirmation from one radio operator to another, wherever it is in the world, confirming that at a certain time, on a certain frequency, with certain kind of equipment and such as that, they have made a real contact so that they can claim credit when they go for certain awards. It's just a great, fun hobby, amateur radio. So let's go now to the art of direct QSLing. The author is Kelly Jones. Call N0VD, November 0, Victor Delta. Now, there's another thing you notice. I oftentimes slow down, not only just to spell a certain person's name if it sounds a little unusual, but also the letters of the call signs. I'm using there the internationally accepted phonetic pronunciation. So, Kelly Jones, November 0, Victor Delta. I was recently having a conversation with a local ham, and a topic turned to QSLing. That's QSLing. As you may know, I'm a big fan of Logbook of the World, LOTW. However, there is also something very gratifying about receiving that coveted postcard in the mailbox. As the conversation continued, he asked why my return rate was so high. He mentioned that over the course of the past few months, he had sent out many direct QSLs, but was getting very small percentage of them returned. As we discussed his situation, I soon realized that he was unknowingly making several mistakes. Now, I don't confess to be a QSLing expert, but there are several things I've learned over the years as being both the one making the request and the one receiving requests from others. Well, there are many facets to QSLing. This month, I'll narrow things down to the art of direct QSLing. Starting at the top of the list, the number one thing you can do to improve your chances of getting that coveted QSL card is to always, always include some type of return postage. Some old-timers might argue that a QSL, quoting, is the final courtesy, close quote, and expect the other party to foot the postage bill for your return card. But the reality is most DX or long-distance stations don't need your card. Think about it for a minute. If a DX station, or DXpedition for that matter, makes hundreds or even thousands of QSOs per year, just how badly does he need another card from Ohio or Illinois? Sure, he might be a county hunter, but he's likely to mention that he needs your county if he is. Ultimately, the DX station is providing you with a new country. It's his card that you're after, not the other way around. Do him a favor and include return postage for your card. What, you might ask, should you include for return postage? The two most commonly accepted methods are to include either U.S. dollars, often called green stamps, or what is known as an IRC, International Reply Coupon. It used to be that $1 United States would cover return postage from nearly anywhere in the world. However, due to rising postage costs around the world and the weaker dollar on the world market, it's advisable to enclose two U.S. dollars to ensure your card comes back. There are even a few places that require three U.S. dollars just to cover postage back to the States. Germany, for example, is one of those locations. With those kinds of rates, it certainly makes our postage rates seem like a bargain. Now, don't rush out and get a stack of $1 bills just yet. There's more to consider. In some countries, having foreign currency is illegal. You also have to be keenly aware of postage theft. In some lesser developed countries, $2 U.S. is a lot of money, and their postal workers know how to spot valuable mail. This is where the IRC comes into a play. An IRC is now selling for $2 U.S. An IRC can be used, theoretically, in any country that is a member of the United Postal Union. The receiver is typically able to exchange an IRC for postage to cover the ounce letter. However, in some countries, exchanging IRCs can be a challenge, including here in the United States. So simply do a little homework on the destination of your QSL card request and enclose a couple of green stamps or IRCs as appropriate. Remember the comment about postal workers being able to spot valuable mail? One of the dead giveaways is including call signs, yours or the DX's, on the outside of the envelope. It is always a best practice to leave this information out of the addresses. Simply include the names and addresses, leaving out any information that might indicate valuables inside. In the event that postal theft is a large problem, consider using registered mail. Sometimes the official stickers will detect would-be thieves. In addition to including return postage, always include a self-addressed envelope. If your return envelope must be folded, fold it in half, placing the fold towards the bottom of the outer envelope. This will prevent your return envelope from getting cut in half when the package is slit with a letter opener. If you are sending your QSL request to a stateside manager, it's not necessary to include the return postage in dollars, although I'm sure they would be appreciative of your generosity. But certainly make sure the return envelope is stamped, since it can take several months for even stateside cards to be returned. If there is a postage increase scheduled in the near future, be sure to include the additional postage on your return envelope. The postage increase may only be a few pennies, but over the course of many hundreds or thousands of cards, those costs do add up and have to be covered by the DX station or their manager. And this may sound like common sense, but putting U.S. postage on a return envelope that is going outside the United States of America isn't going to do anybody any good. However, there are places that sell mint stamps, which allow you to purchase foreign postage stamps. This method is occasionally used as an alternative to sending dollars. Now, for you good folks that are listening to this recording, the article goes on quite a bit longer, has a great deal of specific information that should certainly be helpful in that subject area. And if you're interested, it's in the November 2007 issue of World Radio Magazine. Taking it a step further, if you're really interested in what amateur radio as a leisure pursuit or a hobby is, you should find out where your local amateur radio club or society is located. If you know somebody that's a ham radio operator, talk to him or her, and you'll find out that you're entering into a wonderful world of unique things to do, chase after, listen to, and just have a good time with. Matter of fact, these DX cards, these QSL cards that we're talking about here, apply to shortwave listening, SWLs, as well. Again, the article was by Kelly Jones, called November Zero Victor Delta. Let's go now to the YLs, young ladies. YLs are out and about. The author Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R, call N-0-W-B-V, November Zero, Whiskey, Bravo Victor. YLs did a lot this summer, field day, ham fests, and all sorts of events. Hope to see you participating as well. Let me know what you are doing in amateur radio. Subtitle here, 2007 Friedrichshafen, Germany. Connie Wellner, call DF8MN. Writes in about the annual Hamfest in Friedrichshafen, Germany. More than 18,000 radio amateurs came together in Friedrichshafen for the 31st Ham Radio from 22 through 24 June 2007. On Saturday, the 23rd June, all YLs had the opportunity to have a chat at their YL meeting with lots of coffee and cake. Around 300 YLs took part in this meeting. In the beginning, several YLs were honored for having organized this event for many years. Anne-Marie Folder, DJ0FR, and I, DF8MN, showed pictures and reported about our interesting trip to India in October 2006, where the International YL meeting took place. We hoped we could attract some more YLs to join this conference. We had a lot of fun, and it was really great to visit this remarkable country. Many thanks to Sarla Sharma, call VU2SWS, who made this possible. Come on and join us for the next meeting and journey through South Africa in autumn 2008. A great surprise was a short video from my husband, DL2GA, Gene Ruth, KB8YHN, and Mary Moore, WX4MM, send their greetings from Dayton to Friedrichshafen. Here we have the Southern Mississippi YLs being very active. Betty Jo Baird, BYRD, call KB5CSQ, writes in about all the activities the Southern Mississippi YLs are doing. Wow, are they active? The Southern Mississippi YLs worked hard on the GOTA station during field day this year. They all earned certificates for their participation. The group gets together for dinner as well. The picture posted here is from a recent dinner, and the next meeting was to a covered dish get-together on 13 September. The covered dish dinner is unique because they ask that a recipe accompany each dish. The ladies are planning on putting together a Southern Mississippi Wild cookbook as a fundraiser. Betty Jo also reminded us that if you are traveling in their area, they have a 2-meter net each Thursday night on 147.375. That's on 2 meters. Their membership of 33 YLs averages 12 to 15 ladies checking in on the net. So give them a call in that area around Southern Mississippi. As Betty Jo reminds us, you can find YLs all over. When you travel, don't forget to find out what repeaters and nets might be in the area. Amateur Radio is all about meeting new people, and what better way to meet them than a local event? Local events can include nets, repeaters, hamfests, de-expeditions, and much more. Winter is always a great time to get on the air. Hope to see you on the bands. Write and let me know what YL events are happening in your area of the world. I am sure there is something going on soon. Now here's the information for Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R. Her email is lowercase n0wbv@earthlink.net. Or you can write Cheryl at P.O. Box 342, Littleton, Colorado. That's Littleton, Colorado is C-O. The zip is 80160. And she sends her thanks. Here's a little tidbit of information that's rather unique. The heading is SOS, Titanic. Well, on a 3-month world cruise last winter, I stopped off at Tasmania to visit my old friend Jim Davis, called Victor Kilo 7 Oscar Whiskey, whom I last visited 3 years ago. Jim has a garage full of radio relics, some dating back almost a century. He had me listen to an original mechanical recording of Al Jolson singing Mammy, and later played a cassette copy of the Titanic SOS message. Several VKs, that's the prefix for Tasmania, have copies, but in my 70-some years in ham radio, I never heard of it, so I suspect it never had widespread distribution. Jim is now 92, so I asked him what plans he had for the preservation of this gold mine of gear. I was fearful that much of this treasure might end up in the landfill, so I had him make me a copy of the Titanic message to make sure this rare piece of radio history is not lost. A number of friends who heard the recording wanted copies, so I decided to create the CD along with some commentary. Now let me stress, this is not a money-making get-rich scheme. I travel too much and have no desire to be tied down to even a small business. I estimated costs, not counting my time and coming up with a quantity of 200, at which I might break even cost-wise, selling the CDs at $12 U.S. When these are sold, the project is SK, silent key. Forget about it, it's over. CDs are available for $12 cash, check, or money order from, and this is the gentleman's name, Jack Najork, N-A-J-O-R-K. Again, that's N-A-J-O-R-K. Jack's call is W5FG, Whiskey 5 Foxtrot Golf. His address, 2517 State Highway 31, Hubbard, Texas, H-U-B-B-A-R-D, Texas, T-X, zip code 76648. One thing you'll find, folks, about the hobby of amateur radio, ham radio, is that there are a lot of elderly folks, a lot of disabled people, who still enjoy every day of their life, no matter how they struggle with things, by being or listening to shortwave radio or back and forth around the country and the world via amateur radio. And it's not all that expensive to get into. So try it for yourself, too. Here's a piece from the American Radio Relay League letter. It's titled Hurricane Felix, F-E-L-I-X, Hurricane Felix. On Tuesday evening, 04 September 2007, the Hurricane Watch Net, that's HWN, we're great with acronyms, folks, you must have noticed by now, secured operations on 14.325 megahertz after more than 20 hours of operation with Hurricane Felix. Initially commencing operation on Sunday evening, 02 September, the HWN gathered names, calls, and specific locations of stations that would be able to report real-time weather conditions in the affected area and forwarded them to the National Hurricane Center in Miami. Getting this information beforehand ensured accurate reporting of a station's location when the storm actually arrived. Two of the regular net control stations, Herman Cueva, C-U-E-V-A, his call HR1CP, in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and Hector Godoy, HR3HGB, in La Ceiba, Honduras, felt direct effects of the storm, but remained on the air available for help. In addition to getting real-time reports of conditions in the affected area, the Hurricane WatchNet also put out advisories in English and Spanish so that stations in the area of Felix's path could know what to expect. These reports were often relayed to the local authorities and media, since oftentimes HWN was the only source of information. All power, telephone, and internet were down. Butch Peenick, call NC4G, put in long hours sending out advisories in Spanish. HWN normally commences operation when a hurricane comes within 300 miles of shore or at the request of the National Hurricane Center. It operates with designated net controllers who are experienced in taking these specific reports, net operations, and especially working with the National Hurricane Center in Miami. The Hurricane WatchNet provides the latest storm advisories in English and Spanish to those in the path of storms. HWN is a direct net and requests that non-member stations not in the affected area refrain from transmitting unless requested to do so by net control. A clear frequency is appreciated since reporting stations in the affected area or areas may be using temporary or makeshift antennas, battery power, or operating under conditions that don't allow the transmission of a reasonably strong signal. The VOIP, that's Voice Over Internet Protocol, Hurricane Net was active from 0800 Universal Time Constant, UTC, standing down at 0 UTC Tuesday, 04 September, to gather reports for WX4 and HC. That's the amateur radio call sign for the National Hurricane Center. It's Whiskey X-Ray 4, November Hotel Charlie, the amateur radio station at the National Hurricane Center. The president of Honduras lauded amateur radio on the Voice of Honduras radio station. Quoting, the president of Honduras, Señor Manuel Zule Rosales, says thanks to the community of radio hams for the aid. Adonai Ax Sota, EB1FGO, and a team of translators from the International Radio Emergency Support Coalition, that's the IRESC, brought this news to the VOIP. Hurricane Net. We have a piece here titled CPAC 2007. The author is Wayne Schuler, call AI9Q, Alpha India 9, Quebec. 2007 was the 25th year for CPAC, the ARRL Northwestern Division Convention at Seaside, Oregon. The annual convention held in a resort town's convention center is billed as the Northwest's largest ham convention. The three-day convention held on 01, 02, and 03 June began with a four-hour Friday afternoon antenna workshop presented by Rudy Severns and 6LF to a sold-out audience. Severns' workshop, Practical Antennas for the Low Bands, emphasized simple and economical antennas that the average ham can build. The workshop covered shortened antennas for restricted space, as well as more performance antennas for the low bands. In celebration of the 25th anniversary, CPAC and the ARRL joined forces for a special event station set up in the convention center lobby. Using the call sign W1AW/7, that's Whiskey 1 Alpha Whiskey, that's the ARRL headquarters station in Newington, Connecticut, but it's a temporary location in Oregon. So again, using the call sign W1AW/7, 7 is the call area for the state. The station was on the air Saturday and Sunday. Licensed operators present at the convention were offered the chance to operate the station on 40 and 20 meters. Those working the station will receive a special commemorative QSL card. CPAC thanks ICOM America providing the radios for this event, as well as the digital mode HT radios used by our security team. A special CPAC 25th anniversary pin was made available to commemorate this event. A different pin is offered each year. CPAC is a great place to take the family. The beach and hotels are within walking distance of the convention center. The community is ham-friendly, and you'll find signs in most shops welcoming CPAC attendees. There's always a volleyball game on the beach and lots of younger age locals to meet up with. The restaurants are excellent and reasonably priced. You'll find a lot of hams whenever you visit in Seaside. CPAC is sponsored by the Oregon Tulalip Amateur Radio Club, but with support from the Clark County, Washington, Hoodville, and Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Clubs. We hope you'll attend next year on 30, 31 May and 01 June 2008. You can visit the website at www.seapac.org for more information and to view photos from this year's convention. For those of you that are interested in QSLing, here's an update from the American Radio Relay League on the topic of QSLing. ARRL DXCC manager Bill Moore states that effective 06 September 2007, the ARRL outgoing QSL service will no longer accept QSL cards for shipment to HH, that's hotel prefix, in Haiti, and 9L, 9 Lima, for Sierra Leone. Bill also mentions that when sending cards to confirm 1X1, that's 1X-ray-1 call signs, the ARRL QSL service requests you note somewhere on the card the person who requisitioned the call sign. This will expedite routing to the proper station, and it may result in quicker processing of cards handled through the ARRL U.S. incoming bureaus. Here's a wee bit more news. Another semi-rare entity gets a new ham. Tom, call KC0W, that's Kilo Charlie Zero Whiskey, recently moved to St. Helena Island and is expected to be active as ZD7X, Zulu Delta 7 X-ray. His activity will be on modes CW, that's Morse code, SSB, single sideband, RTTY, radio teletype, and PSK. Look for his operations on 160 through 6 meters. Special attention will be given to 40 meters, 75, 80, and 160 meters. ZD7X will be active in all major contests, and Tom has already announced that he will be active as a single op low power entry in both the CQ Worldwide DX SSB contest, which is at the end of October. You folks listening to this might miss that. And the CQ Worldwide DX CW contest, 24 to 25 November. When not contesting, Tom will be DXing in general. His QSL manager in the United States is the call sign W0MM, Whiskey Zero, Mike Mai. Let's put a bit of nostalgia into the recording now. Old Time Radio. A fond field day memory. The author is Jim Keitley. K7NPS. I read with great interest the article by Jim Mokenthin and Zero Q in the July 2007 edition of World Radio. It got me to reminiscing about past field days in which I participated. Now that I have been licensed for over 50 years, I have some great memories of field days past. In addition, I was involved in several field days even before I got that magic document from the FCC. The first field day in which I participated took place on Kentucky Lake near Camden, Tennessee. I do not want to strain my memory in an attempt to put a year to it, but let me assure you that it was a very, very long time ago. I was 15 at the time, and I recall was assisting on the waterfront at a Boy Scout camp near my home, which was on the lake. The head waterfront counselor was a ham and invited me to join him in field day efforts. It seems that he had located a small island a few miles away, and he wished to operate from there. What an opportunity! The two of us had been practicing silent canoeing, so when reconnoitering the field day site, we were using the stealthy mode of transportation. As we were gliding silently along the shoreline, my partner, in the back position, dipped his finger into the water and flicked droplets on my bare back to attract my attention. I turned to be able to see what he wanted. His right index finger was vertical across his lips to signal for silence. He then pointed toward the shoreline a few yards away. I had expected to see deer or perhaps one of the huge turtles that lived in that area or some other fauna. However, there in the afternoon sun were three lovely young ladies sunning themselves in their nicely tailored birthday suits. Now I have long maintained that particular region has some of the most beautiful scenery on the planet, but this far exceeded all expectations and caught me completely off guard. One must consider that the date was in the early 1950s, and this was a most rare event indeed. At that moment, my vocal cords escaped control, and I began to emit rather odd sounds.
God!
I was able to regain control in only two or three seconds. However, at the first sound, the heads of all three girls popped up as one, looking directly at the intruding canoe. Again, those pesky vocal cords broke loose.
I hear you! I hear you!
This time, however, I was much more quickly back in control by biting down hard on my tongue so that it would stop flapping against the roof of my mouth. Nonetheless, again as one, the girls casually picked up their towels and, in a dignified lunge, darted behind some nearby brush, moving at about warp factor 4.2. A few moments later, a very angry feminine voice pierced the quietness of the afternoon.
"I know who you are, Jimmy Caton, and I am going to tell your dad."
At this moment, I turned around to check my partner in the stern of the canoe. At first glance, I thought he had gotten something stuck in his throat, like maybe his canoe paddle. He was slumped forward, gesturing in my direction while emitting what I took to be gas. Turns out that he was laughing hysterically at my discomfiture. As we paddled away, I was really shaken by the threat to tell my dad. It then occurred to me that my dad had a most wonderful sense of humor and would see this as a huge joke, not to mention the fact that I was not the one who was in violation of the standards of conduct for the era. After returning to the dock from our outing to scout the field day site, my partner was overcome by the need to share the adventure, leaving out nothing that would add to my discomfort. I was treated to the spectacle of him frantically pouring buckets of water on the campfire that had now multiplied itself to about 5 feet in diameter. I can assure you that I took pictures with my trusty Brownie Hawkeye. We strung a long wire from the tiny island to the shore, and Dad came out to visit and brought the drop cord long enough to have the generator on shore while we had the relative quietness of the island for operation. The Johnson Viking and the Matchbox worked great. We used a Halicrafter SX-24 to receive. I logged and duped while my friend operated. We had a great field day, although it got pretty cold overnight without a campfire. I never heard any more from him about the canoeing incident, and I never heard any more from the threat that was made by the girls. I can't recall exactly who two of those girls were, but I am pretty sure of the third. Maybe at the next class reunion. They were indeed high school classmates. I will just drop a question on her and see how she reacts now that we are in our seasoned citizen years. Maybe I will see someone else's face turn red. Hope to see you on the low end of the band. That was authored by Jim Keightley, K-E-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y, call of Kilo 7, November Papa Sierra, K7NPS. Well, let's finish up here with a few special event announcements. Remembering the Edmund Fitzgerald, Stu Rockefeller Amateur Radio Society will operate special event station November 8F, N8F, and Kilo 8F, 1700 Zulu, 1 November to 1700 Zulu, 05 November, from Whitefish Point, Michigan, in remembrance of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The Stillwater Amateur Radio Association, SARA, will operate special event station Whiskey Zero Juliet Hotel, W0JH, 2100 Zulu, 02 November to 1900 Zulu, 05 November 2007, from Split Rock Lighthouse, that's ARLHS USA, 783, in Minnesota. Stillwell Amateur Radio Association is a very good friend of the Courage Handy Amp System. And as a matter of fact, our director, Patrick Tice, WA0TDA, is a member of the Stillwater Amateur Radio Association. Livonia Amateur Radio Club will operate special event station W8F, Whiskey 8 Foxtrot, 1500 Zulu, 2000 UTC, 03 November, from the Dawson Great Lakes Museum on Belle Island in Detroit, Michigan. Muskegee County EMCOM Center. Muskegee County Emergency Communications Service Incorporated is operating special event station K8WNJ, 0900 through 2100 Eastern Daylight Time, 03 November 07, to celebrate the completion of the new Muskegon County MCON Center. Now, for Veterans Day coming up, the Baton Rouge Amateur Radio Club and the USS Kidd Amateur Radio Club will hold special events 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, Central Daylight Time, 11 November 2007, to commemorate Veterans Day. The Michigan Amateur Radio Alliance will have special event station W8USA Whiskey 8 Uniform Sierra Alpha 1300 1930 Universal Time Constant UTC 11 November at the Grand Rapids Home for Veterans in Michigan. A Santa Parade. It's about that time, folks. Peoria Area Amateur Radio Club operating special event station W9UVI Whiskey 9 Uniform Victor India 1500 Zulu 23 November to 0300 Zulu 24 November to celebrate the 120th annual continuously run Santa Parade in Peoria, Illinois. New Clubhouse Golden Anniversary, the Steel City Amateur Radio Club is operating a special event station W3KWH Whiskey 3 Kilo Whiskey Hotel 1400 Zulu to 2300 Zulu 24-25 November 2007 to celebrate 50 years in our new clubhouse. Maybe time for a new clubhouse, huh? And the last one, a rather popular unit here, 1010 Nets. 1010 International Net Incorporated will operate special event station W6OI Whiskey 6 Oscar India 0 Zulu to 2400 Zulu UTC, 24-25 November 2007, operating from all 10 U.S. call areas. Anyone working all call areas receives a free certificate. Special event QSL cards are available for working individual stations. So you see, there are plenty of special events to look around the dial for, folks, when you get a chance and some free time and you have the capabilities on your radio to do so. This brings us up to time for this month's reading of World Radio Magazine, November 2007, published by Ahmed Noble. Call N6WR, the editor, Nancy Cott, WZ8C. My name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call is November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot, N1BLF, my QTH. Location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right down near good old Cape Cod. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. You may reach us at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhem@courage.org. Our website is www.handyhem.org. 73.